Every startup begins with an ambitious founder and an idea, but what inspires them to take the leap into the entrepreneurial world? I'm Peter Jun Ho Sang, founder and CEO of Beyond Form, and welcome to our new founder series. I'll be sitting down with a few of our startup founders to hear about their journey as entrepreneurs in the fashion tech world. On today's episode, I'm sitting down with Lars Richer, founder of Swap, to talk about his personal journey of entrepreneurship. Taking a leap of faith when you're older can be difficult, but this is exactly what Lars has done into the world of digital fashion. Leveraging on his creative marketing experience working for companies like Lego, he's applying the same creativity into Swap. The platform allows you to design their own digital fashion using generative AI. Have decades of corporate experience translated into startup life?
When you're 40, you've been in a lot of different situations, so you're not surprised by them. I mean, you can be surprised by the amount of problems you need to solve every day, but you're aware of, okay, we can solve this one at a time. And sometimes I think when you're younger, you get stressed out or really frustrated, or, you know, you have a different stamina when you reach a certain age.
Let's get stuck into Lars's founder journey on this episode of Venturing Into Fashion Tech. How are you today, Lars?
Yeah, I'm good, Peter. And how are you?
I'm great, thank you. I'm looking forward to today's conversation all about Swap and your platform and your entrepreneurial journey. But before we get into that, I just to give some context to our listeners. So in terms of the global generative AI industry, it generated $10.5 billion in 2022, and is anticipated to generate $191.8 billion by 2032. So it's a huge burgeoning industry. It already is a huge industry, but it will be even larger. It's witnessing a compound annual growth rate of 34.1% from 23 to 32. That's by Allied Market Research. So it's showing exponential growth. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later on, Lars. So Gen AI, though, is a nascent category in the fashion industry. Many brands are experimenting with it across several company functions, including product development, retail, marketing. So thinking supermodels that don't exist in real life, and customer service. You're tackling it from the digital fashion perspective, but in this context, the two fields are yet still to merge together in the next wave of virtual offerings. So without further ado, I'm eager to hear your journey, Lars. What was life like growing up in the Nordics, and how did that lead you into entrepreneurship?
Well, the short answer is the Nordics doesn't lead you to become an entrepreneur. Because okay. We have our own welfare system. So, you know, we're actually kind of raised to be on a payroll, to be an employee. So there's definitely not the culture of being an entrepreneur in Denmark compared to the States, for instance. But the interesting part is that we have, you know, these programs like Shark Tank now, and everybody watches us, but it's kind of an entertainment. But very few dare to become an entrepreneur. And I think that's kind of sad. So I'm hoping that we will change this culture in the future.
So if you weren't surrounded by a culture of entrepreneurship, how did you just decide to get into it one day? Like, there must have been some trigger point or something that did inspire you to make that leap into the field.
Yeah, I've always been drawn to it. I mean, ever since I was a kid, actually, I remember the street where I grew up, there was an inventor. I thought it was the most exciting thing to come to his house. And actually, my great-granddad was an inventor as well. He was the inventor of the only Danish motorbike ever built. And the funny thing was, he was educated to be a teacher, and somehow, suddenly, he started to use vacuum cleaners and motorbikes. So maybe somewhere down the, you know, down the line, there was something in my genes. I don't know, I've always been drawn to you know, entrepreneurship and startups also throughout my career, not only when I was a kid.
So you were surrounded by some inspirational points when you were a child. What specifically did you like about the notion of entrepreneurship?
I think it's the freedom. You have total freedom. I mean, it doesn't mean that you work less, not at all. Quite the opposite, I guess. But you can do things your own way. You can make your own rules. I actually did a TEDx talk about this topic because, as I mentioned in the beginning, we are not raised to be entrepreneurs in Denmark or in the Nordics. I kind of compare it, being an entrepreneur, to, you know, riding a motorbike instead of being in a comfy bus. I used to work at Lego, for instance. That's a really comfy bus and everything is taken care of for you. But I think what's interesting about being an entrepreneur is, if you use the analogy of the motorbike, you can feel where you are. You mean you're exposed. You have to be really, you know, aware of what you're doing, and you can smell where you are. And if you're in the bus, you're just there and everything is very comfy, but you don't really feel or where you are. And I think that's the kind of the same feeling you get when you're an entrepreneur. It's a harder life, but it's much more rewarding.
You went into corporate world, as you said. So you worked at Lego. When was the moment that you realized that you wanted to leave the corporate world?
Actually, throughout my career, I've always been, you know, pendling between these two different big corporations and startups. So it's not a new thing, but you're right that I actually quit my job at Lego to become an entrepreneur again. I think if you have some things you really want to achieve, it's much easier to do it when you do it yourself instead of in a large corporation. And I think that's why you are also much more motivated when you are an entrepreneur, because you can see, you know, there's a short distance from your idea to take action on it. And you can miss that in the big corporations. I had these ideas. Actually, now we are talking about digital fashion. But when I stopped at Lego, it was to create a design web shop where we involved our users. We called it democratic design already there. So all these interior designs, we made all these different prototypes. They collapsed with different up-and-coming designers. And then the users should vote for the items they thought should come into productions. And not big productions, probably like some of them were like 50 units or even smaller. But the idea that people could have an impact on what should be on the shelves in the webshop, basically. And that was really fun to do. And there's some reminiscences from that in the swap concept, actually. So it's definitely about democratic design.
Did you all sit around playing with Lego bricks in the Lego office?
Actually, you do that at every meeting. It's mandatory that you play.
Okay.
Play is a really big part of being a Lego, and I really like that. And don't get me wrong, I really like Lego. Lego is a fantastic brand, and it's just something different, you know, being in an organization with 15,000 people, or probably even more now, than being in a small, very, exposed startup where you really need to, you know, solve a lot of things all the time.
You worked in digital space at Lego. Obviously, not digital fashion, but do you think that helped you into your journey into the digital fashion space?
I think fashion for me has always been something I've been drawn to as well. I mean, even back when I was a kid, for instance, when I was, I did all these drawings, both sketches, but also outfits. And I remember when I was 10 years old, I got a tailor-made pink suit. So I think it's been always been there. And also, when I remember back, David Bowie was my big hero. And one of the things he's really good at is being this chameleon, right? And changing himself all the time, his appearance and his style for each new album. And I guess has always fascinated me how you can express yourself in different ways with fashion.
And obviously with digital fashion, it is not necessarily new, because digital fashion as a software has been around for quite a while now. But in terms of the industry really picking up and the consumers picking it up, that is relatively new since the last couple of years. How did you decide to get into digital fashion?
Well, it actually came gradually, because when we started Swap, we did it as a... I was teaching a masterclass in high school about innovation. And we decided to build Swap as a concept together with the students. And back then, it was a swap concept for physical clothing in the high school. So we made it easy for... It's a big high school in Copenhagen with a total of 3,000 students. So we made an app together with the students. We built it, very agile together with the students within 3 months, and then they could swap their clothes in the schools, and they could see how much carbon emission they saved by doing that instead of buying new stuff. But when we did the business development and asking them, okay, now we tried to add some gamification to it. So now you reach this level. Would you like to have free delivery on your next on your next order or whatever? And they would, no, we want, you know, a digital avatar or whatever. And then it got me thinking, yeah, we should definitely embrace this. So we thought of, you know, that the starting point with the app would be the physical clothing and see how much carbon emission you saved. And then we developed the concept into the more digital parts with AR filters and so on. And then I got invited to Silicon Valley to pitch to different VCs over there. And when I did the pitch on stage, they said, and I still had the physical part as part of the content, but when I did the pitch, and afterwards they said to me, we really like what you do, but get rid of the physical part. And I listened to that, and then we moved full on into digital after that. And then, of course, the interesting part is that, to me, I think there's a problem with the aesthetics of AR filters, because they're not really good enough yet. But what is happening now with the Gen AI is that you can make, you know, pixel perfect fashion yourself. And what we've done in Swap is given you the opportunity as a user to completely unleash your creativity and create the outfit you want. And then if you're satisfied with the result, you can add your own face to it, so it looks like it's you in this surrounding on this new outfit. So we really like the idea of that the aesthetics are really good when we do it this way instead of AR filters. So that was kind of a leap for us when we got into that and could build our own Gen AI, for instance, for the face swap.
And what was it like going from Copenhagen, where you've just described actually there's not necessarily much of an entrepreneurship scene there or a startup scene, to, you know, the epicenter of the world, undoubtedly, for startups, Silicon Valley? What was that experience like?
It was a lot of fun. And I learned a lot. There's a big difference in the ecosystem. And I think all who have been in Silicon Valley will agree on that. You come back with a lot of, you know, energy and optimism and enthusiasm. And they're very much focused on the big idea. They don't really care about when I pitch to potential investors in Europe, they want the, you know, Excel sheets, a lot of details. In Silicon Valley, they go for the big idea and the team, of course, and the timing. So they think of you in very different terms. And it's very appealing when you're there, but you have to adapt to going back to Europe. We definitely have an ambition of wanting to go into the States with Swap, and I wouldn't mind going back there, because I really like the mentality.
So maybe you'll be moving there one day then. But you mentioned the energy and startup building is not for the faint-hearted, and it's quite often said that it is a young person's sport. Just for context for our listeners, because they can't visually see you are probably falling into the more mature, the later stage founder, shall we say. How do you feel about going against this stereotype?
Yeah, you're right. I'm plus 40 and plus even more.
We won't say the exact age, but plus.
No, I don't mind. I'm 53. No worries. I still feel like 25. No, but you're right. It's not. It's a bit unusual. But actually, I read a report the other day stating that the most successful founders are plus 40. And I think it kind of makes sense to me, because you make a lot of mistakes throughout your life, right? And hopefully you learn from them. And when you're 40, you've been in a lot of different situations. So you're not surprised by them. I mean, you can be surprised by the amount of problems you need to solve every day, but you're aware of, okay, we can solve this one at a time. And sometimes I think when you're younger, you get stressed out or really frustrated, or, you know, you have a different stamina when you reach a certain age.
And do you think having that past experience, because you just have been in the game longer, whether that's corporate world or entrepreneurship, do you think that has given you more advantage compared to some of your other peers when building your startup?
I think it's good to have the combination of some experience, like the one I have, but I really like to combine it with the energy from really young people. And as I mentioned in the beginning, you tend to, at least when you're in the big corporations, when you've been there for a long time, you tend to be a bit bored and you're not. There's also been a study here in Denmark that, you know, 8 out of 10 who goes to work are not motivated. And I'm shocked when I hear, you know, stats like that, because it should be fun to do your thing. I have this saying that, you know, it should be fun to make money, but we shouldn't have that so much fun that we're not making money. And I definitely want to, you know, use that mantra also for Swap. So I think I like the combination of the experience and some, you know, young guns who really want to change something and do it their way.
And I love the fact that you're saying you can't have too much fun when you don't make money. Quite often in fashion, people just have so much fun in fashion, but they don't necessarily make money, especially if you are an emerging designer.
I can give you quite a few examples. I agree.
Exactly. I think with what I see from a lot of younger startup founders is that they do go in there with a lot of naivety, which could be a curse and advantage at the same time. The advantage being, of course, as you said earlier in this talk, that there is that curiosity potentially that is heightened, but a curse at the same time, just because you're going to make so many more mistakes and somebody that does have a little bit more experience than a younger founder. But of course, not to say that young founders are necessarily the best ones to create a startup, because of course we have seen some very young prodigies out there, but quite often we see that the second time founders or the founders that started a little bit later on are more likely to succeed because those blind spots aren't necessarily as prevalent in the founder journey.
Definitely agree on that. I remember when I was in Silicon Valley, they really like you if you've been in a failed startup, because then they say, oh, you're not an entrepreneur until you've been there, right? The Americans really like the comeback kids, right? But I think to a certain degree, they're right that you need to, as you say, have this, you know, very naive approach. That's a good thing. I mean, I don't want to be that old guy who's sitting at meeting and saying, no, I've tried that, don't do that. I mean, we should fail fast and we should embrace failure. If you're not making any mistakes, you're not doing enough.
I completely agree with that. And currently where I'm situated in France, the culture here is completely different to that of the American culture, where necessarily embracing failure is not taken as lightly, or there's not necessarily that more gung-ho approach with building things, which is quite often a frustration for me. And I didn't actually realize that until moving to this country a few years ago. But it's definitely a culture shock, I would say. And I do think that having that fear, not having that fear of failing, is definitely something every founder should go through. It's almost like having those battle scars. You need to have those battle scars before you can win your next war type of thing. And you've proven that you've gained the battle scars to make it through to the next stage. And I quite often say that with entrepreneurship and creating a startup, it is about having that grit, which is essentially what we're describing here, going through all of those battles. So in terms of then Swap, for our listeners, what is it exactly?
What is Swap? As you mentioned, it's digital fashion, but basically what we want to do is to unleash, especially Gen Z's creativity, to design their own fashion for their digital life so they can express themselves freely. And the way they can do it with the Swap solution is that they can write a text of the vision they have for the fashion. It will be generated for them. It will be stored in the wardrobe. And then they can tweak it until they're satisfied with the result. And as I mentioned earlier on, one of the features we already have is that you can blend your own face into it. And I remember I sent you an image, Peter, and you liked it. It was funny. You blended in, right? And the funny thing is, when we show people this, we get this really wild, response to it. So it's so much fun to see how people react to it. So you could say that this is the starting point for us, that you can create your own fashion and it's free to use. And next thing we will launch is the open call. So when you have created something, then the other users on the platform can vote for it, and then you can win different money prices each month. One of the things we could really like to challenge is that I think there's an issue with generative AI that it's very biased. It's based on a lot of stereotypes. A lot of the listeners have probably seen some of the posts on different SoMe where they show, okay, if you want to show a doctor, then it's a male, and so on. There's so many stereotypes. So we would really like to try to challenge the bias also in the AI, so we can beat the bias and say we want to embrace the diversity, because that I think that's definitely what fashion is also about, you know, embracing that diversity and being as many different versions of you as you can be, depending on what do you feel like today. And that's definitely the greatest thing you can do about digital fashion. There are no limitations. You can do anything. When it comes to digital fashion, I remember we talked about it earlier, Peter, and I gave you the analogy of if you wanted to travel from Paris to London, you pack a suitcase with your physical clothes in it. Our vision on the long term is that you have a wardrobe with all your digital fashion. So no matter where you travel in your digital life, in metaphorically speaking, you'll be able to take your swap wardrobe with you. So if you are in an online meeting, you can take on the suit or the dress or whatever you want to wear. Or if you go into your games or in digital social worlds, you can have all your wardrobe there with you, no matter where you have your digital presence, you should be able to express yourself as freely. That's our vision on the long term.
And we mentioned right at the start of this episode the generative AI component, which you are integrating into Swap. How does that work specifically, and why did you choose to merge the two things together?
Because we were really struggling with the AR filters. We thought at one stage that that was the way to go. We did a lot of research, both to build our own, but also who were the best in the industry. I mean, there are some good ones out there, definitely. But you definitely still have the problem with, you know, the body tracking. You have all these filters on different SoMe. TikTok are really good at doing the filters, for instance, right in real life, and it's really good for, you know, the beauty industry, for makeup, for instance. But they have the advantage that it's only the face, and when you have the whole body, the tech is still not there. I'm sure it will be there in short time, and we are really eager to looking into the new Apple glasses when they get there, and if they really will create, you know, the impact like iPhone or the Apple Watch. Mm-hmm. I think it will be more similar to Apple Watch, that they put out the first generations, and they found out they figure out how to use it like did with the Apple Watches. But once it will be there, and it will be more mainstream, and the tech is there. Of course, the AR part is really important as well. But we don't see it mature enough yet, so that's why we are full on with the Gen AI right now. It's so powerful that you can create your 2D images, but you can also create small videos, and very soon you will be able to create 3D models from the prompts you did and the designs you get. So that means that the getting it into games, the path to getting there is it's in the very near future. And that's really exciting, I think, because post-pandemic, Gen Z, they spend more than 9 hours in front of their screens, and it's just crazy amount. There was a recent survey out here in Denmark that stated that for Gen Z, their digital appearance was more important than their physical.
And obviously, we mentioned at the start that 34.1% compound annual growth rate between now and 2032, so it's growing pretty quickly. And it's substantial as well. How quickly do you think for digital fashion and Gen AI, is it going to catch on for the fashion industry?
I think the biggest problem is that it's very nerdy. You have to go to Discord, and you have to... a lot of people, it doesn't have this... back when I was at Lego, we had these two words for every digital solution we built. It had to be simple and seamless. And I really put that, you know, in the back of my head. And what we're trying to do is to take all this amazing tech and make it much more simple for people to use, and especially for Fashionistas. Right now, they can prompt it very simple on our in our service, and they will get the results straight away. And we are actually doing things in the background to make it easier for them. So we help adding stuff to their prompts that they don't see, but they get a better result that way. When you move into the Web3 space, is that it's the narrative has been dominated by the nerds. And I think that's the biggest problem that has been with Web3. Because you should not talk about all these tech stuff. Like, for instance, if you're, you know, you're buying stuff from an e-commerce, there's a lot of things going on in the background. I don't really care. As long as I get the, you know, the outfit I want in the right size and as soon as possible, I'm happy. And the same thing with digital fashion. I think people tend to overcomplicate it. Also the brands, I think they are... they're very much focused on, you know, building loyalty with the users, and I can understand that. But for instance, with the NFTs, it can be really like you have to solve a riddle, and then how do I get it into my wallet? And, you know, a lot of people don't get it. And even amongst Gen Z, because we did a lot of research on this topic, and they're not that familiar with all of this. They still want a simple and seamless solution. So I think that's one of the biggest mistakes, that fashion industry has made it too hard to use digital fashion.
That's a perfect opportunity for Swap then, potentially.
Yeah. I think so too.
I think so too. Yeah, so it sounds like it's going to be this hub of digital fashion, and there's going to be a lot of content on there very soon, which I am personally looking forward to see what creators come up with. I always think it's, especially with Gen AI and with digital fashion, of course, we've seen a couple of images like the Pope image earlier this year done by Gen AI wearing like a Moncler-inspired garment.
Yeah.
Of course, it's very funny, but I think there's obviously a lot more potential than what we have seen so far with the two things coming together. So you should see actually what people can create on your platform.
I totally agree. And I think the interesting part, because we've done a lot of testing, so we had test users in, and even though people say that it's very stereotypical, I'm amazed by how different all these designs are, that people, you know, the outcome of what they create, it's very different. And I really like the diversity, and we really want to embrace that.
I just want to finish off this episode, Lars, with a quick fire round of questions. So the first answer that comes to your head, are you ready?
Go for it. I'm ready.
The last gen AI image that you face swapped with?
I created this backstage band room from an indie rock concert where it was really messy, and a lot of guitars and a lot of booze and stuff. And then I face swapped myself into the guitarist of the band.
Is that you living your dreams, Lars?
My son is playing the guitar. I don't know. Maybe.
Okay. One designer or brand that you'd like to see on the Swap platform?
I've always been a fan of Alexander McQueen.
One item you'd like to swap?
A suit with animations on. Because as we talked about, in real life, you have limitations, right? I can't get I can, but it would be really expensive to have a suit with animations on.
Three words that encapsulate your experience as a founder.
First word that comes to my mind is roller coaster, right? It's not just one steady road. It's, you know, it's you're very high one day, you're very low the next day, or it can even be in the same day. You know, it's a roller coaster, but that's what makes it fun. Roller coasters are fun, right? And then I think it's very much about stamina, you know, because I remember also, you know, when I look back at when I was a kid and doing a lot of sports, the ones who actually got pros and got really, you know, to the national team and that I played with, they weren't the biggest talents. They were just the most dedicated. So I also think that the last thing that comes to my mind is that when you're in a startup or you're a founder, it's very much about self-development, because you need to figure out things you never knew how to handle before. And to me, that's a good thing, because you learn and you grow, and you're capable of more than you think you are.
The best tip that you'd give to somebody who wants to build a startup later on in life?
Just do it. You know, there's never a right time for it. You can overcomplicate, you can overthink it, but that's never the exact right time. And that's also why we're doing the soft launch now. We know that we could do all of this, but we just need to get it out there. And the same if you want to start. I know it can be really scary to think of, you know, to leave your job or whatever. But yeah, you could also just start in your spare time, right, in your weekends. And if you really, you know, if you can't help thinking about it all the time and you can't help working on it all the time, then you're probably on the right track, and then you could maybe quit your job.
I like that. Just do it. I completely agree with that. People just need to, if they have an idea and they want to do it, they need to do it. Thank you so much for your time, Lars.
Yeah, thanks for having me here, Peter.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to click follow to keep up to date with the latest episodes. And if you like this episode, please give us a review. If you want us to feature a specific theme or guest, please give us a message at beyondform.io. I will see you very soon.